Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
How you doing, Gear?
What's happening today, Rich?
Oh, it's Groundhog Day, so I don't know. I didn't even hear if we're going to have six more weeks of winter or it's all over. But, you know, that's the big event today. I actually did have a caller, and I don't know whether he was pranking me, wanting to know who was playing tonight. So I think he might.
Maybe he was. Are the Rangers playing tonight, or you know, the Devils? Maybe that's what he was.
Yeah, really. What's on Showtime? No, Homeland starts next week, so you don't have anything tonight. And Ray Donovan is over. So let's quickly talk about the Hall of Fame. I'm not a big Hall of Fame guy, baseball, football, whatever. But of the inductees, the modern inductees, you've got Atwater, Bruce Hutchison, James, and Polamalu. Any quarrel with any of them, or do you think all deserving winners?
Well, I would like to see it get in, and I think he'll probably get in next year. We've had a logjam with the offensive linemen, and so last year Mawai got in, this year Hutchinson, so I would anticipate that Faneca would get in next year. There wasn't much to choose between Faneca and Hutchinson. They've both been waiting a while. And then the guy that I really, you know, almost for sentimental reasons, I would have liked to see John Lynch get in yesterday. And although I'm picking the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, imagine what a weekend he would have had if he had gotten in the Hall of Fame yesterday and the 49ers win the Super Bowl tonight. But it might be more appropriate for him to get in next year because the Super Bowl is in Tampa, where he played the majority of his career. But Troy Polamalu was the only first-time eligible that we knew he was going to get in. Reggie Wayne was also for the first time, and he made the final 15. But I would actually put him behind, you know, both Isaac Bruce, who got in, and Torrey Holt, who was in the final 15 but didn't get in. So we didn't have any real, like, super tough decisions. But I thought we picked a good class, and really from those 15 finalists, I thought you could have gone with a combination of any five and justified it.
Gary, a lot has been made of baseball Hall of Fame and unanimous. You know, Mariano got it. Derek Jeter fell one vote short. Mm-hmm. I don't even know in football, you know, have there been unanimous choice? I mean, it doesn't seem to be that big a deal in football compared to baseball.
Well, they never reveal the vote totals.
Yeah, the numbers, right.
Not to us and not publicly. In fact, I was once told, and actually it wasn't that long ago, that, you know, they have an independent accounting firm that tallies up the votes as we're voting. You know, we vote twice on Saturday. We go from 15 to 10 and 10 down to 5, that they have an independent accounting firm that tabulates the votes and then just tells the Hall of Fame, okay, these are the 10 in the final 10, and here are your final 5. And they don't even give the raw votes to the Hall of Fame. And I know someone that knows that, told me that. I find that a little hard to believe. But so we never really find out. The unanimous thing has never been an issue because the vote total has never been released publicly. I would have no problem with the totals being released. I wrote a thing for SI.com last night in which I revealed my ballot on the cutdowns. I believe in complete transparency here. I mean, there's really nothing to hide.
Well, I guess the one guy, and we still don't even know the one guy that didn't vote for Jeter. We don't know who it is. So,
but let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a big baseball fan, although I've never written about baseball. And I know Mariano Rivera is the greatest relief pitcher in history, but I don't think anybody would say that he was the greatest baseball player of all time. And so the fact that he was unanimous to me was a bit surprising because if Willie Mays wasn't unanimous and Joe DiMaggio wasn't unanimous, and Mickey Mantle, and just go on and on and on, then why all of a sudden does somebody have to be unanimous when the greatest players in baseball history were not? What has changed that all of a sudden being unanimous is such a big deal. And I like Derek Jeter's comment. I think 396 voted for him and one didn't. And he said it's hard to get that many people to all agree on one thing. And I think that's exactly right. Yeah. I think the bigger issue, rather than Jeter not being unanimous, is to somehow do a historical study on what would have led somebody not to vote for Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or, you know, some of the other all-time greats. But as long as they weren't unanimous, I'm not sure anybody should be unanimous.
Yeah. Well, the thing is now, I mean, I think the way the sports writers think now is, well, you should be in or you shouldn't be in. So if you should be in, vote for you the first time. It doesn't matter
right.
that your first ballot or second ballot or whatever. They just vote for you. How about analytics? Baseball certainly has changed an awful lot in awarding, MVPs and everything else mm-hmm. based on analytics. Is football going in that direction, or is it much harder to quantify? Are the metrics harder to come up with in football?
No, I think analytics is becoming really big in football. I know that Mike McCarthy, in the year that he was out of coaching before the Cowboys hired him, and he basically went on the campaign trail the last few weeks of the season, and had a lot of stories out there about how he embraced analytics and wanted to have an analytics team if he got another head coaching job. I know Dave Gettleman spoke about adding, I'm not sure he called them analytics guys. Did he call them computer guys?
Computer guys, yeah. We got four
like
computer
that.
Guys.
But he was beefing up that department with the Giants. I definitely think teams are trending in that direction. Me, you know, the fact that I've covered this such a long time, and I always subscribe to the Bill Parcells theory in evaluating players. And anybody who's followed Parcells through his career knows he always says, I go by what I see. And I think in evaluating players, sometimes these teams are outsmarting themselves and overlooking what a guy does when you're watching him play, and then getting too hung up on, you know, how fast is he from yards 10 to 20? And what does that mean for a cornerback? And, you know, if the separation with the receiver, does he have the speed to close the gap on him? And, well, you can really tell that by watching rather than having a look at numbers. But definitely, I don't think the NFL teams are as into it now, right now, as baseball teams are, where it seems that computers are making the managers' decisions before the game, and then they just look at a printout sheet to find out what to do. I don't think the NFL is at that point yet, but it's getting that way. And Doug Peterson, I think, has really embraced it. How many times did he go for it on fourth down? Because, you know, the analytics tells him that, you know, it's a worthwhile risk, and, of course, depending on what spot on the field you're on. So it definitely is becoming more a part of football.
Gary, do you ever see a day where a general manager, you know, if it's a traditional setup where you have a coach and a general manager over him, will sit in on Monday with the coach and come up with game plans? In other words, general manager will have a say in week to week as opposed to just shopping for the groceries.
Well, in a lot of cases, I don't think the general managers are X's and O's guys. They're good at evaluating talent, or they're good with contracts, and I'm not sure that some of these guys who aren't quote-unquote football guys but are very good negotiators and good organizers, I don't know that you want them sitting in on a Monday or Tuesday on game plan day and saying, you know, we're playing the Jets this week, and, you know, my film review has revealed they're vulnerable for this or that. Unless the guy played the game, you know, I'm not sure that you want to listen to somebody whose training was as an accountant or a lawyer telling you what to do in that regard. And, you know, to look at it, you know, I'm a huge Mets fan, and to have Brody Van Wagenen involved in managerial decisions, which it sounds like he wants to do, and that had a lot to do with who they picked once Beltran is the manager, and now Rojas, that it just seems like he wants to be involved right up until first pitch is thrown, and then every decision that the manager makes during the course of the game has been predetermined in his meeting with Brody. And I'm not doubting the fact that, you know, he has a baseball background, he played in college, but, you know, his training in this business is as an agent. And I don't think I want him making baseball decisions, you know, strategy decisions during the course of the game based on a bunch of computer printouts.
Hear, hear. What do you think of the trend now that seems to be starting where Ron Rivera is given a lot of authority in Washington because the owner, and, you know, Daniel Snyder, says, well, you know, that's the way it should be. It seems that Tepper and hiring Matt Rhule is going in that direction. It seems now that they're saying, hey, the coaches, the old Bill Parcells, you know, if I'm going to, you know, make the meal, I should shop for the groceries,
right,
are actually getting more empowered. I mean, even Kyle Shanahan apparently, you know, was the guy that kind of pushed John Lynch to be the GM of the 49ers. Yes. So, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that you can't look at anything the Redskins are doing and say, okay, they're starting a trend.
Yeah. or a trend in the wrong direction, Snyder. Yeah.
Yeah. But this does run in cycles. There was a period there where a lot of coaches had authority. Mike Holmgren, that's the reason he left Green Bay to go to Seattle, was he wanted to have both jobs. And it's, you know, Belichick does that now, and Parcells did it with the Jets. It's not an easy thing to do, to have that complete responsibility. I think what Kyle Shanahan has done is bring in a guy that he trusts and let him run things while Shanahan's, you know, with the team. But, you know, to give that kind of – now, it's worked out there, all right? There's no doubt that it's worked out. But Kyle Shanahan was a first-time head coach. He was under 40 when he got the job. He still might be under 40. And I don't see a lot of owners putting all that responsibility and trust in a first-time head coach. Now, Ron Rivera has been a successful head coach in the NFL. How he does as a personnel guy is anybody's guess. I mean, we don't know if he's how good he is at picking players. So I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, and Matt Rhule, he spent 1 year in the NFL as an assistant offensive line coach with the Giants. They have a general manager there that Tepper kept in Marty Herney, who is very experienced. So I'm not sure at this point it's going to have to play itself out going through free agency in the draft to see how they split up the responsibilities there. But, I think it takes a special person to be able to do both jobs. And I think during the free agency period era that we're in, I think it's been proven that 9 times out of 10, it's too big a job for one person to do.
Talking to Gary Myers. And Gary, you know, baseball, they're talking tanking, you know, and they go through the Houston scenario before they knew about the cheating and, you know, what other teams have done. And it looks on the surface that Carolina might be doing kind of the same thing in that, you know, now you've got Olsen who's going to be gone. You've got Kuechly who retired.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know whether Cam Newton is going to be back.
Right.
It looks like, you know, it's like breaking down the team completely, getting high draft picks and starting all over again. But that's kind of been going on in football for a while.
Yeah, Miami has done that. Cleveland has done that. It's a good thing that Matt Rhule got a 7-year contract, you know, if they're to go that way. You know what's really interesting? I the players will never tank. It's the front office who determines what the 53-man roster is that can set up a season when it appears that they're tanking because they do what you just said. They get rid of a lot of the veterans, and certainly appeared that the Dolphins went into last season with the full intention of getting the first pick in the draft, and then they start playing too well at the end of the season, and they knock themselves down. But I want to ask you this question, because I put this on Twitter, and I got such varied responses, and some of them, you know, very emotional. I think the Giants, now I'm not saying the players should have tried to lose this game, because players will never try to lose. They're trying to protect their own jobs. But as an organization, the Giants would have been much better off losing to the Redskins late in the season. Losing the toss in overtime and the Redskins driving down the field to score. That way you still have Barkley showing that he was back to his form as a rookie. Daniel Jones would have thrown four touchdowns instead of five touchdowns, and the Giants would have had the second pick in the draft instead of the fourth pick in the draft. And I know that Chase Young kind of tailed off towards the end of the season, but by that point, I think he was getting double and triple teamed. Everybody I've spoken to say he's a generational pass rusher. And I'm interested in your opinion. Do you think the Giants winning a meaningless game in December against the Redskins, which obviously had no impact on whether Pat Shurmur was back or not, do you think it was more important for them to win that game than have the second pick in the draft? My answer is absolutely it would have been more beneficial to lose that game.
I'm with you. I mean, I honestly, a month later, I don't remember, did they win four games or five games this year, you know?
Let me ask you, do you remember late last season the Jets playing a game in Buffalo in the 2018 season?
Okay.
And if you remember the game, do you remember who won? The answer, and I don't blame you if the answer is you have no recollection.
Yeah, well, I remember last year they beat Buffalo at the end of the season, but the year before, I don't know.
Darnold's rookie year.
Yeah.
The Jets won a late season game in Buffalo, and it cost them, it dropped them from the third pick in the draft, from the first pick in the draft to the third pick in the draft, which meant they got Quinnen Williams instead of Nick Bosa. Now, you tell me what was more important, winning that game in December in Buffalo, which obviously had no carryover effect to last season, or would they have been better off with Nick Bosa over Quinnen Williams, who basically, and I think he'll be a good player, but he's an inside player, and he had a very low impact rookie year, and Nick Bosa is already one of the best pass rushers in the game. He helped turn around the 49ers defense, and they're in the Super Bowl tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, it's the same situation that the Giants were in this year. And just like the Jets, they went ahead and they won a meaningless game, costing themselves an Ohio State pass rusher who I think is going to be a real star in the league.
So, Gary, I agree with you. I think it's much, much more important to get that guy if that guy is there. But how do you set that up? I mean, you're right in that the players don't tank. The players know that, hey, every play I make is on film, and if I start looking lousy, people, well, you didn't try in the last game. You didn't play to the whistle. So the players won't do that. But how does a coach, I mean, he can't tell the players, hey, guys, we're going to lose this game. How do you do it?
If Shurmur knew he was going to be back, and as an organization, they got together, just like the Dolphins did before the season. But if Gettleman and Mara got together with Shurmur and said, maybe it's time to take a look at some of these guys. The season is lost. Let's give them some real playing time to make an evaluation for next year. That could have perhaps influenced the outcome. But I'm not even saying they should have done that. I'm not saying the coaches should have tanked, the GM should have tanked, or the players certainly weren't going to tank. All I'm saying is that the end result in the long run was completely meaningless in terms of what it's going to mean to the 2020 Giants, other than the fact that it dropped them down two spots in the draft and cost them Chase Young. The other thing you can look at is, assuming Joe Burrow goes first to Cincinnati, which I think he clearly will, if the Giants were picking second, and let's just say they didn't fall in love with Chase Young and wanted to take an offensive lineman instead, it put him in a prime position to trade backwards to a team that wants Tua or Justin Herbert. That would have been a prime position to trade back to a team that wants a quarterback. And now they're sitting at four. And I'm fairly certain the Redskins are going to take Chase Young. And then the Lions become the team with a position of power, because I don't think they're going to move on from Matt Stafford. Maybe they will, but I don't think so. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback at three. So they can, and they'll lose out on Chase Young, who I think they would have taken. So they can move backwards to a team that wants a quarterback. And the Giants are sitting at four without any leverage to really make a trade. They'll still get a great player there, but it just removes so many possibilities by not being in the number two spot.
Yep, absolutely. No question about it. And that's probably the only way you do it. You say, hey, let's take a look at these guys, you know, the guys that, you know, been backups and, you know, mm-hmm. see if they're going to be worth keeping for next year or whatever. And you can position it that way. I don't know how the fans would react. I was saying in those last games, I said, you know what? I'd like the Giants to play really, really well. And I like Daniel Jones to look great and then lose a close game. You know, that's what you want to see. Right.
It also broke a long losing streak that Jones had, because he hadn't won since when they beat beat Tampa and then Washington.
That was it. Yeah, that was it.
In his first two starts.
And then Eli won that other game. Well, that's interesting the way it goes. So you like Kansas City. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think Patrick Mahomes is so good that he'll overcome Andy Reid tonight, because I always count on Andy Reid making a boneheaded decision in a big game. I always told people I think he's one of the best coaches of this generation from September through December, and then something happens in January where he's just not the same guy. I don't know if it's the pressure or there's too much. He thinks too much that he's never won a Super Bowl. And the Chiefs, and before that, the Eagles, have just lost a lot of high-stakes playoff games that they had no business losing. But Mahomes is just so good that they can fall behind 24-0 like they did against Houston and win a game. Now, they're not going to be able to do that tonight. If they fall behind by any more than 10-0, they're going to be in trouble, because the 49 defense is really, really good. And I think the two for Kansas City will be getting off to a hot start and protecting Mahomes, so that 49er defensive line, which has five number one draft picks, doesn't start teeing off on him. But I think this could be a really good game. I just think that the Chiefs' offense is more explosive than the 49ers' defense is dominant. And although I always think that defense and running the ball wins games like this, there's been nobody like Patrick Mahomes probably since the early years of Elway, who can make these kind of throws, thrown across his body, you know, thrown on the run, and he runs the ball really well when he has to. So the one other point I'll make to you, Richard, is things seem to have fallen into place for Kansas City. Miami beats New England in the last game of the regular season, which jumps Kansas City from the number 3 seed to the number 2 seed, which gives them a bye in a home game. And then Tennessee goes into Baltimore and beats the number 1 seed. So instead of Kansas City having to play at Baltimore, Baltimore's eliminated, and Kansas City plays Tennessee at home. I mean, those are two huge changes, you know, based on other teams' results that work right into Kansas City's favor. So you kind of get the feeling that maybe the stars are aligned to Andy Reid this year, and he finally gets a Super Bowl championship. He has more victories than any coach in NFL history that has not won a championship, either an NFL championship, an AFL championship, or a Super Bowl championship.
See, I would make the point, if they won the coin toss last year in the AFC championship game, they would have won that game. You know, Mahomes would have driven them down the field, and they would have won, right?
Richard, was there anything that says that the Chiefs couldn't have played good defense on that drive and maybe at the very least held them to a field goal?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, defense is a third of the game.
That's true.
Special teams is a third of the game. So
I was going to ask you, a caller asked me this before, Gary, and I fumfled. I don't have an answer. Why did the Chiefs start so slowly? They got way behind Houston. They got behind Tennessee. What is it about them that in these games that they haven't been able to be competitive for the first quarter or so until they catch fire?
Yeah, I don't know. Because it has not been in their DNA to play this way. And it just seemed they came out really tight against Houston. On the first series of the game, Kelsey dropped a third down pass, and then, or maybe that was the second series, and somebody else dropped a third down pass on the first series, and you know, they came on the wrong end of a couple special teams plays with a blocked punt. It just snowballed, and you got to give them credit for kind of putting their foot on the brake and defensively, and then Mahomes just turns it on. But in a game like tonight,
you're just not going to see them be able to come from behind like that. Although I will say, you know, you can never say something won't happen when the Patriots were trailing the Falcons by 25 points with 20 minutes to go a few years ago in the Super Bowl, and they came back and beat them in overtime. So anything can obviously transpire in games like this, but I think Kansas City will get off to a better start. And then on the other side, Garoppolo throws 8 passes in the championship game. And although he learned under Tom Brady and was around him for 3.5 years, he's not Tom Brady. And if they have to rely on him to win the game tonight, I don't think he'll be able to do it.
Do you see it being a low-scoring game or a high-scoring game?
No, I think I picked something the other day. I think I picked 34-17, Kansas City. And I think they'll pull away from them in the second half. I hope it's a good game. Last year was a dud. It was just a last year would have been boring even for a preseason game, that New England Rams game. So I'm hoping that that it's a tight game and there's a lot of offense, and it'll be a fun game to watch. And I think it will be.
Do you think the long halftime break gives either coach an advantage? Does it favor Shanahan, Reed, or is it just, you know, toss-up?
I think they're both really good with the offensive schemes and adjusting. So I don't necessarily think one or the other has an advantage in that regard. And then, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, ever since he left the Giants, until this year, has not had a great deal of success. And a lot of that has to do with that he didn't have Justin Tuck, Michael Strahan, and OCU Minora on his defensive line anymore. But we saw, and everybody, Richard, always says, give Belichick 2 weeks to prepare, and he'll shut down any offense. Well, I know you can't necessarily say the same thing about Spags, but in the Super Bowl after the 07 season, the Patriots, were the highest scoring team in NFL history. And Spags had 2 weeks to prepare for them after playing them in the last game of the regular season when the Giants gave up 38 points. He obviously learned a lot from that game and then had the 2 weeks to prepare for them again and held them to 14 points. So I think Spags is a really, really good coach, and he's done a great job in Kansas City this year. And I think that he'll find a way to stop the run, unlike Mike Pettine in Green Bay, who just didn't seem to have any answers for Raheem Mostert running for 200 yards in the championship game. I think Spags has already come up with a way that he'll be able to stop the run.
Final question. Strategy-wise, we have seen, you know, recently that you win the coin toss, you defer. You want to get the second half kickoff.
Right.
Do you see that happening today, or let's say 49ers win, you know, do they want to give the ball to Mahomes right away and figure, okay, they're off to slow starts, maybe they'll go 3 and out or a sputtered drive, or do you say, yeah, we really, really want the ball at the beginning of the second half because of a long layoff? Do you think we'll see the winner of the coin toss do anything different tonight?
I don't know what these teams have been doing in the playoffs with the coin toss, if either team has even won the toss to start the game, but it's a really interesting question. I can see Shanahan deferring because they have so much faith in that defense, and maybe they feel they can set the tone by giving Kansas City the ball first and stopping them on a 3 and out, or maybe giving up one first down and forcing a punt, and that can set the tone for the game, and then they get the ball to start the third quarter. If I'm Andy Reid, I take the ball and I try to shove it down their throats on the opening drive and have that offense of 49ers playing from behind the first time they get the ball. So if I'm Shanahan, I defer. If I'm Andy Reid, I take it, and I'll probably be wrong.
Okay. Gary, it's always a pleasure. I, like you, I'm hoping for a great game tonight, and I think we'll get one. Great talking to you. We'll do it again soon.
Take care. Anytime, Rich.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.